Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us here today for Get Yourself the Job. Now, for those of you who have been tuning in since September 14th of this year, with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, my co-host, dear friend, who is an incredible human being, entrepreneur, executive coach, inspirational speaker, among many other talents, and so excited to have him here with us as a co-host. And before we jump into episode 3 in the series that we've been doing on getting yourself the big job, I would love to start by thanking our sponsors, the people who make today's show possible, the folks over at Markham Search LLC. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, including temporary services, permanent placement, and executive search. So please do keep them in mind for all of your recruitment needs. Brandon, my friend, thank you so much for being here. It's so much fun to get to be in collaboration with you in this way.
I love it. I'm really enjoying it as well. And I'm just grateful to be on this journey with you. We've been known each other a long time and been having, I think, one of the times you said we should be recording our conversations for years. So I'm happy that we're actually doing it, making it a show. But I'm particularly honored to be joining you, as you truly are an expert in helping people find their best path and finding that dream job.
Well, it takes one to know one. And I love the series that we've been exploring together of getting the big job. I think one of the things that many people have been struggling with during this past 6 to 8 months of COVID has been finding purpose and meaning. And a big job, by the way, is not just a big title or a big fancy office. It's whatever your version of a big job is. And there are certain components that are necessary in order to be someone who has a big job and whatever that looks like for you. And I think what we wanted to perhaps explore today were the ideas of influence and leadership and how those two things are going to help you navigate and steer your way not only to the big job, but to help you sustain having that big job once you've landed it. I would love to know your thoughts on these ideas, Brandon, of influence and leadership.
Well, yeah, you know, one of the benefits of my last 6 years in particular of working an organization called Advancing Women Executives is the front row seat I had to vice presidents or above in companies ranging from Hewlett Packard to Lyft and Uber and everything in between. And one of the things that is so important is it's not just about getting into the seat. We've talked about how do you get into that seat. It's really important of what you do while you are there. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's funny, it actually begins, I find, when someone gets the big job, if you will, whether it's a new job or internally at their same company, it's so important to understand why are you stepping into this, both personally, but what are you being told? Because I think sometimes we get into these new jobs, these big jobs, and it's easy to forget with all the politics, with all the machinations, especially with all the things going on in the world, why we got it in the first place. The more external information you get in, the more you forget about the original purpose of the new role. So it's always important to start from the beginning and remind yourself of why am I here?
I think that is the question that we could do a whole series in and of itself on, is why you are in the job that you're in. That in and of itself could be a rabbit hole that we could easily go down for months on end of why am I in this role and what's the point and what am I meant to learn from it and what am I meant to teach others? And I think when you get a quote unquote big job, chances are you're in a role that somehow or another influences, leads, and manages other people, and you're really in a spotlight. And it's almost like you became famous overnight, whether you know you're the CEO of a 5-person company or VP of a 20,000 person company. The spotlight is now on you and you're under a microscope. Everything that you do is being watched in a very good and in, I don't even want to call it good or bad, in a way that can highlight and emphasize things that you may or may not like about yourself and your leadership style and qualities. Tell me, Brandon, like, what are your thoughts on that? How can you become aware of it in a way without becoming hypercritical of yourself and others? I know that was a trap I fell into and why, you know, I tell people I was a recovering jerk for a little while because, well, actually, I think I'll always be one because, you know, you don't realize when you're in a role and perhaps nobody taught you how to lead or how to influence and you think that there's this power dynamic that you have to put people in their place. And I know I really stumbled and fell many times when I was building my company.
Well, yeah, and it's a good example. I mean, you know, this is one of the things I like to say is imposter syndrome is maybe the only syndrome you actually want on earth because it only affects the most powerful and successful people I've ever met. I like to say mediocre people don't run around the world going, could I be better? Am I better? They go, I'm mediocre. It's fine. The world will go on. You know, leaders, the people, as we get higher, as people rise, it's not just the expectations that put upon us, it's the expectations we put upon ourselves that creates that imposter syndrome, that syndrome that says, I'm an imposter and I don't belong here. And you mentioned that the word jerk or what have you, but so often we act like jerks or we act inappropriately to others because of the way we're speaking to ourselves. And, you know, I've seen this time and time again. I certainly see this. Unfortunately, it's a trap that men can fall into all too often. No, no, no. It's your fault. It's your fault. It's your fault. And not holding up that mirror. And I think, but the problem of holding up too strong a mirror is you can only say, maybe it is all my fault. Maybe it is all my fault. And so both don't really work. I think the more that you realize we're human with all of our flaws and traumas and wonderful gifts, the more you truly accept who you are, the less you start worrying about how it shows up in the world. And the more you say, as long as you're trying to do good and have positive impact, you're probably going to have it. It's when we start lying to ourselves that we start over accommodating and overplaying our hands or doing the blame game. So that's what I find.
You just made me think of something, Brandon. I remember years ago when I first hired a business coach of my own, and of course, Brandon, by the way, is an amazing business coach, so please do keep him in mind for that. I had my business coach taught me about something called the drama triangle. Have you ever heard about that before?
No.
Oh my gosh. So did you ever see the cartoon Rocky and Bullwinkle when you were a kid? So for those of our listeners or viewers who might not be familiar, you basically have Dudley Do-Right, the Canadian mountaineer who's always doing good and coming in, he's the hero to save the day. And you have Nell, who is the victim, and she's always being tied to the train tracks by Snidely Whiplash, the evil villain, who is always the bad guy who's doing bad things to people, right? Now, the funny thing is that in any moment in life, many of us, when we are impacted by anger, resentment, frustration, I guarantee you are somewhere in the drama triangle. You are the hero, you are the victim, or you are the perpetrator. And I'll never forget, Brandon, I was actually chatting with somebody. I was speaking at a conference. There must have been 300 people, and it was people who ran law firms. And we were talking about the hero, the victim, and the perpetrator. And I said, you know, the quickest way to get yourself out of the drama triangle is to acknowledge which one of the three that you've been. And so I had everybody break out into groups. And there was this one gentleman who bravely offered to share his story. He said, you know, I can actually see a recent instance, Jennifer, where I was all three. I was the hero because it was the day that a new contract was supposed to go into effect. And I wanted to save the firm extra money. And I found out there was another vendor that could save us $1,000. So I swooped in like the hero. But then I was there that night till midnight trying to get this new contract executed, and I was the victim because of it, But then I was the perpetrator because I was the one who put myself in that position. And you could just see his whole face lighten up when he had that revelation that if you are being the hero, the victim, or the perpetrator, you are not empowered. You're not able to lead. You're not able to make sound decisions. And it can be so powerful just to extricate yourself from that situation.
Yeah, I love that. That's exactly right. I mean, the more... This is the issue with the big job, is that you can find yourself in all of the, you know, historically, it's actually easy to feel the victim, especially if you're starting your career. You're like, well, this person's a jerk and this person, you know, all the layers. But the higher you go, the more responsibility you have, the more, you know, the world becomes so many shades of gray. And so one thing that I think is important there is that awareness that you're talking about, that you have that aware. Once you become aware, it's amazing that if someone is able, and this, by the way, are they able to become aware? Because if they're blocked, they're just not. I've spent my life, as have you, talking to audiences upon audiences, probably 20 to 30,000 people. And I can walk in a room and go, this is just going to be bad. I know it. I'm sorry for whatever happened before I walked in this room. And I'll tell you, the worst times were when the leadership of the company didn't set up clarity on why I was there. What was the purpose? When people came with purpose, and certainly when people came with their own volition, amazing. When people were forced to be in a room and they had no idea why they were there, they came up all of their own stuff, all of their own thoughts, all of their own what have you. And so first we have to be able to receive, and then we can be able. And it sounds like you created the environment, as I like to do, where someone can receive information or awareness. The other thing that I think is coming up a lot in the world we're living in now, because of these isolated bubbles we're all living in and these virtual environments, is we are putting a lot of pressure on ourselves and we can feel very alone. And something I said to a client recently is, you know, we're talking about that, a very C-level leader who wanted to empower, a CEO in this case, empower the entire company, empower all the employees, empower their customers, empower. And I recognized, you know, in this instance, they weren't feeling empowered. And that was there was many things that were playing into that. But first, it was about empowering that individual. And then they could empower. And I see that all the time, especially in the C-suite, where a C-suite executive wants to create empowerment or transformation or change. But it has to start with that feeling of being empowered within ourselves. And that's to your point, that's a lot of times awareness.
Well, let's talk about how you do that, Brandon, because I think that no matter where you're at in your career, whether you're just beginning your career or perhaps, you know, you did just get that big job, I think that empowering yourself is a very unique gift that we're not born with. Nobody teaches you in school how to empower yourself. You can add 1 + 1 = 2. You can tell me the periodic table, but nobody teaches you in school. How do you empower yourself, especially in a time like this where you feel like you're being crushed? Like, do you remember those like garbage crusher things, the compactors they would have? I feel like it's like, okay, kids are going back to school. Parents are trying to juggle that. I'm working from home. I don't have all the resources I'm used to. I don't even get to see the teams that I manage. This is one of the biggest things that I hear from the leaders that I work with. And it's like this trash compactor and you're feeling like you're pushed. It's almost like Indiana Jones, you know, where the things are coming towards them and there's spikes and people feel like, I'm not going to survive this.
Right. Well, I think that this is the reality, right? I mean, you know, you use that example of being in the pit or whatever it is. And so often, yes, I mean, there's two ways to think about it. Yes, Indiana Jones, get out of the pit, you know, with yourself. I mean, there's got to be a symbol here that the fact is I'm holding up my computer with Indiana Jones box set right now for my wife working in entertainment days. She met Harrison Ford, by the way, which is another story for another day. But here's the point. Yes, ideally, get out yourself. But that's ideal. And we are not living in ideal times. We are not living in ideal times. And so I always think about the books, you know, I'd like to write if I have time one day. And I never want to write just a self-help book. I want to write the how to help yourself by reaching out to others. It is so, there are superheroes that can do it. And I think we all can be our own superheroes. But right now, there is no shame in reaching out to others for help. And so to get yourself out of that pit, you may need a long rope and a lot of people pulling you out. I certainly did in April after I left my job for, you know, the longest job I ever had, and into COVID and into the chaos, as so many of us had. The way you can help yourself by reaching out to others is twofold. One, maybe my all-time favorite, is it actually makes you feel empowering or empowered to help. Mm. When you empower someone else, you will feel empowered. That doesn't mean you tell anyone what to do, but that means you offer help freely and watch if it doesn't come back to you. That is certainly my life story. Two is seek out those who know you best and perhaps you've helped them in the past and say, what is amazing about me? Because I'm stuck right now. I'm in the pit. I'm in the despair. Tell me something about my past, something I've done for you that is strong, that's helped you, that's led you, that's done anything. And then take what they say as truth. Because we get into these pits, or as I call it, the fun house, where all the mirrors make us look distorted. And we start believing that that's our reality when it's not. Our reality is the life we lived always. And no one knows that better than those who you have knows that better than those who you have helped along the way. Reach out, and I have blogs on this, and I call it the power of three. I talk about a lot. Reach out to a family member, a friend, and a colleague, and ask them the same question: what is my superpower if you're a nerd like me, or my secret sauce if you're a chef, or better yet, just what are my strengths that help you? You're looking for the thread. The common thing you always do: are you a visionary? Are you a strategic expert? Whatever it is, that's your truth. That is the thing that will get you out of the pit. And Amy Cuddy talks about this a heck of a lot better than I do, with the neuroscience behind that. The more that you plug in these factors of who you are and what makes you strong and unique, one of a kind, the more your neuroscience changes. It goes, I believe that. But you know what we do? We get in that pit and we start looking around and going, everything's dark, everything's ugly, maybe it's me. And then we wonder why we can't empower or get out.
Yeah, and you just touched on something so important, Brandon. For anybody tuning in, one of the greatest things that you can do to get the big job and to remain in the big job is to learn to be a great mentor and to be mentored. I know, I think we've touched on that before in this series, though it is so critical and it's worth mentioning again. I know one of the best pieces of advice I got when I was in a mentor program where I was being trained to mentor people over the course of a year is to ask questions rather than giving the answer. It is so easy, especially when you get a big job, if you're leading an organization, if you're overseeing one or more people, you think, oh, I have it all figured out. Therefore, I should just regurgitate the answers that somebody gave to me. But think about throughout your life, the times where somebody has asked you probing questions, they've asked you thought-provoking questions rather than saying, Brandon, what I need you to do is I need you to write the email this way. One of my favorite things that I would do with the leadership team that was in my old organization that we built is I would say, how do you think we should formulate this email? And then if they said something and it wasn't perhaps in the highest and best good of how we could have executed it, I would ask them, how do you think that will land when the person receives that? Is there anything that you would want to receive differently if you were on the receiving end of that? And when you're doing that, you're helping reshape the way that, not just the way that somebody does things, but the way that they think about things. And when we can empower others to shift their own perspectives, as well as to restrict, to not give it all away. I was listening to a podcast a couple of weeks ago, and on that podcast, they were talking about if we give somebody something and they're not able to receive it, it creates a short circuit. So if I'm just going blah, 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 dictatorship style to you, do this, don't do that, it creates a short circuit in our relationship, and either you're going to leave or I'm going to leave, and it's not a win-win. What are your thoughts on that, Brandon?
Well, you know, one of the things that's really vital, they talk about this, Sylvia Ann Hewitt is the expert on executive presence, someone who has deciphered what it is, and it boils down to really three things. it boils down to appearance, which actually matters the least. It matters a little bit more, funny enough, in certain industries like entertainment and maybe fashion. But in general, appearance is only 5% of it. Then it gets into communication, which is 33% of the executive presence, or 33% of the most important part of executive presence. And that's what you're talking about. And then we've been talking, starting this show today, we were talking about gravitas. Do you take me seriously? Say, be taken seriously, you got to take yourself seriously. Doesn't mean you have to be serious. But communication is so important. It is so important. And from company to company, it's important. And I think one of the things that you're talking about is seek to understand if you want to be understood. Seek to understand if you want to be understood. And so many people just speak. I see this also time and time again when someone goes, why am I not having influence? Why, I got this role. And a lot of times this happens in leadership. Someone gets into the big seat because they did such a good job of managing everyone below them, but they're not managing up. The worst case scenario I see a lot too, not necessarily the people I coach, but someone gets in the seat because they've managed up incredibly well, but they've never managed down. That's equally really. And if you've ever, and a lot of you have worked for those people, and that's detrimental as well. At the end of the day, you want to do both. You want to manage up and manage down, but you would probably want to change your approach. It is not one size fits all. It's the power dynamics that we talk about a lot in society today. So I'm reading this book in Lincoln, which I'm prone to do. I got a bunch of historical books behind me. And Lincoln in particular was misunderstood. His contemporaries thought he was a backwoods person who had no intellect. But what people who knew him best understood was he didn't care about impressing the elite. He cared about we, the people. He cared about the people who he needed to inspire. So he used plain language to communicate with people rather than talk down the people. He talked with people and at them. Gettysburg Address is something like less than 300 words. And it's one of the most memorable quotes of all time. Speeches of all time. And I think this is the thing. In our desire to be heard, we don't spend nearly enough time thinking about the audience who we need to listen to us. And great leaders, the best leaders in the world, the ones who have the most influence, they are thinking about audience first, message second. Audience first, message second.
Say more about that, Brandon. I love this. And I would love for you to elaborate a little bit more too on manage up, manage down, and then audience first, message second. I think those are both really salient points that I want to be sure we address.
Yeah. Well, I mean, going back to my recovering lawyer days, I was a trial attorney. And, I've always rooted myself in authenticity and honesty as best I can. And in law, it was always, I always said it, we were going to tell the truth. We just got to figure out the truth that's going to resonate with the judge or the jury. That's all that matters, to be honest. But I would never had a client hypothetically that lied or that I knew of, and I certainly didn't do it. But what I would do is say, this jury comes from this background, or this judge in particular. It was great with judges, because you would say, this judge, I know this personality, I know where they're coming from. And what I would just do is, it wasn't that I was saying anything different, I would just tailor my approach. One of my favorite stories of all time, about that, just using a lawyer story real quickly, is I had a trial one time, and I'll be the first one to tell you, I wasn't the world's greatest law student. I was the world's greatest social law student. And in doing that, I made amazing friends and had amazing experiences, but I always knew I was going to be a trial attorney. I was in court one time, and this kid who was going up as this young man who happened to be the best law student, one of them, and we're in the back room, we're trying to settle a case. And he says these words to me, I'll never forget. He goes, Brandon, you were never the best law student, not a lie. You should settle this case. And I said, I would love to settle the case. Just make an offer I can bring to my client that they'll say yes to. And they offered me, I don't know, pennies on the dollar. So I said, let's just go to trial and see what happens. Trial goes on. In their defense, a lot of the facts were on their side. But there's the end of the trial. And the end of the trial comes, and the way a trial works is I get to present my closing, they present a rebuttal, and then I get to go again. And normally you would never give up that last rebuttal because that's your time to make your final point. I go on for about 20 minutes explaining the medical records, explaining the cause of the case. He goes on for an hour and 15 minutes explaining every single thing. And I'm watching the judge, and the judge is sitting there rolling her eyes, getting angrier, angrier, angrier. I mean, he's mansplaining it to the nth, to the 12th degree. And finally, I get up and I go, and he looks at me, gives me a smug look and goes, that's it. You know, I proved every point. I stood up. I said, Your Honor, I believe you've been on the bench for 10 years. And she got mad. And she said, 11. I said, no, that's right, 11. I'm so sorry. I assume you know how to read medical records. I assume that you want to understand every fact of this case. With that, I'm going to rest because I don't believe my colleague understands any of those things. And I sit down and best, you know, he almost got, turns out he almost got fired. I didn't know that. But it was a huge award. It was so far beyond. That's the point. It had nothing to do with the facts, but in his speaking, and his speaking down and him belittling, shortest closing I ever had, best reward I ever got, or best result I ever got. That is the power of influence. It is not what I said. It is 100% the audience and who and how it was said to. It was said. And also, don't underestimate your competition. It's another thing there. So that's audience. Audience is important. And you deal, you know, and I would do that with conservative judges, and I would do that with conservative juries. And I bring that into recruiting, and I certainly bring that into all of my executive coaching. Tell me the, you know, as I like to say, don't tell me the facts, tell me the judge. Don't tell me what job you're interviewing for. I want to know where you're interviewing. Because culture is everything. So that's audience, or my best example of audience.
I love that story, Brandon. That's one of those stories that, kudos to you, by the way, for being such an incredible storyteller, because that's one of those stories that I can see myself 10 years from now, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners can visualize it, where you're going to be like, oh, remember that story Brandon gave? And I didn't. It was funny, when you first said audience, it didn't land with me. And then when you said that, it made me think of one of my favorite things I learned about years ago, which is the idea of emeralds, rubies, sapphires, and pearls, which is kind of like disc profiling. And it's knowing who you're talking to. Are you talking to somebody whose main priority is details, whose main priority is fun, who wants to be seen as the most important guy or gal in the room? And when you know how to speak to somebody, if you're talking to somebody who just wants to be seen as important, as though they're into the details, you've completely lost the audience. And so I think that just really illustrates the point that you raised with that story with the judge.
Yes, I love that. I love those insights of understanding the motivations. Right? Because as a leader, we're talking about the big job, your goal is to create a result. You know, you don't have to win the hearts and minds to create that result. You know, if someone's having a bad behavior, you just need that behavior to stop. You know, try to win the hearts and minds later. I mean, sometimes it's just, you want a result. And how are you going to get that result? I think it's so important. So hearts and minds sometimes aren't won in the moment, they're won over years. But results can be won in the moment.
I love it, Brandon. Well, I think we may actually have to do, not have to, we may have an opportunity to do another episode in the series. This is the fun thing, is the series is just kind of evolving into its own its own thing. And so we may want to continue this conversation in next week's episode. And for those of you who are just tuning in today, you can check out the prior two episodes that we've had on getting the big job. And each month, our intention is each month to bring you different kind of top-level topics and then deep dive into the topics each month. And of course, there are many episodes, over 200 episodes, that you can find on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes, or also on latalkradio.com's website. And Brandon and I also created an email for you because we would love to interact with you more and to find out, you know, what are the hot topics on your mind that you would love for us to be deep diving into, that you'd love for us to have experts on the show with. So if you want to email us any questions, thoughts, or comments, you can email us at getyourselfthejob@gmail.com. And Brandon, if people want to reach out to you, I know you have your own coaching practice. Where would they go to do that? Just so we can just kind of always remind people of where to find you directly and me as well.
Yeah, BAM Leadership Coaching is maybe the best at gmail.com. BAM Leadership Coaching at gmail.com. And they don't pay me anything, but I'm a nerd for LinkedIn. So you can always follow me on LinkedIn and find me on LinkedIn. And certainly if you reference the show, not only will I accept, but I'll certainly send you a message back. And I think you and I are very similar. We do this to be in service to others. So if there's anyone out there listening that I can help or be in service to, I truly embrace the idea of servant leadership first.
I couldn't agree with you more, my friend. That's why we do this. That's why you show up every day. Doing a podcast is a labor of love. You know, you're birthing new stuff and you're intending, my intention, and I'm sure it is for a lot of us who do this and for you too, Brandon, is that if this episode made a difference for one person, it was worthwhile. Whether one person tunes in or 100,000 people tune in, great, then we can help more people. But if it made a difference for one person, it was a worthwhile labor of love and endeavor.
I love that. I have my wall of inspiration above, and it's to change the world, you just have to change one life. And I think we get bogged down in this world of all the stuff going on, and help the person next to you first. Change one life and see if you don't change the world. And we can just help one person, then I think that's a gift that not just you and I can do, but I think anyone who's listening can do. So I really do empower anyone who's listening to go out, maybe a colleague, maybe a friend, maybe a family member. But
yeah, be of service. And that's the quickest way too. If you're feeling down, one of my teachers taught me that a long time ago. If you are feeling depressed or if you're struggling with finding happiness or joy, find one person, have an accountability buddy. That's one of my old favorite go-tos, is even if you're accountable to another person, you just check in once a week. I know, Brandon, you and I have been that for each other, you know, over the years. Even if 6 months would go by and we hadn't caught up, it would just be like, hey, how can I support you? What do you need? And just being there for one another, it just creates this amazing sense of camaraderie. And you, your heart, your spirit, your mind, your body, you're uplifted as a human being, just being able to be of service.
I love that. For some reason, I love metaphors and visuals, but I have this idea that you go to someone and they're like a balloon, and you can inflate them and they can lift up. And if you're feeling down, as they rise, they will take you with them. And so I love that. You just inspire me on my new geeked out metaphor.
Oh my God. You need to go write a LinkedIn article about that and we can all check it out.
Perfect. I like it. All right.
Well, thank you so much, Brandon, my friend. Thank you to everybody who tuned in out there. Thank you to LA Talk Radio. And for anybody out there who might be celebrating Yom Kippur, wishing you a happy and easy fast. So wishing everybody well. Have a great rest of your week.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.